Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
What is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh my God, I'm going to say something so controversial.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, a podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? This week, we celebrate the Gay Ass Live Show hitting New York City next week with a re-release of one of our most popular episodes with Dame Bowen Yang. It's so amazing to get a glimpse back into what the podcast was 2 years ago when this was recorded. Fun fact, this was recorded literally 9 days before we moved to LA. And it's just incredible to see how far we've come. My interviewing, I do think, has gotten better. But I also think that Bowen is such an icon that no matter what, it's a joy to listen to. You'll also get a glimpse into my obsession with Kim Kardashian. To be fair, she had just hosted SNL, so I was clearly fixated on that. And it's amazing to hear a pre-season 2 White Lotus hot takes conversation, a pre-Fire Island release date. Just such a fun blast from the past. If you want more fun gay assery, the Patreon is bumping this week. I had some horny girls in the DMs asking for the video from last week's episode with fitness gorge queen Sam Light. So that full video episode is at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And there's a bonus episode of the top 5 daddies who made me into daddies. Only $5 a month for all of that. So if you can support, it is a dream of mine to build that bigger and bigger and have more and more amazing content for you. We're going to get into this episode with Bowen Yang. If you don't have your tickets yet to That's a Gay Ass Live Show in New York City, they're almost sold out. It's Friday, November 3rd, and the link is in the description or on my Instagram at Eric Wills. You'll see Bowen Yang, Broadway's Jessica Vosk, Chris Murphy, the Stradiolab Girlinas, and more. I'll see you in New York next week, and enjoy! What an amazing day for That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Bowen Yang, I just have been dreaming, wishing, hoping, and the fact that you are here, I cannot be more excited and just so appreciative that you are here. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my gay ass heart.
Here. Oh my God, I'm so grateful from the bottom of my gay ass heart to be here. Should we key in the listener with our scheduling drama?
I think we should.
Everyone. All right. Well, Eric reached out in the loveliest way possible. I was so excited to do it. And then shit got crazy on a Monday. And then I just fully forgot. I was on the train when you emailed me, hey, are we still on? I was 15 minutes late. And then I was like, oh my God, I forgot. I was heading into work because they called me in last minute. And then.
Can you illustrate the look on your face when you realized what was happening?
It was like my eyes went up, like my eye line went up. Like it's, you know, when you look at the ceiling, when something is so shocking,
jaw open, eye up,
jaw dropped, eye up. Like, oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's it. Yeah. You're doing it anyway.
And then you went,
that was it.
But listen, and then I want to illustrate to the audience that the second Bowen got into the Zoomerie, he started to apologize profusely. I said, Bowen,
because
look me in the eyes.
Because you deserve it.
But like, listen, I do appreciate the apology, and I never want you to feel unappreciated in your apologetic ways, but I want to let you know that your response to me was so gracious and kind that zero part of me was like, well, the rumors are true. Which there aren't rumors.
And the rumors are that Bowen sends really harried emails. I mean, oh, we should say Mercury was in retrograde. And as of today, we're out.
Thank God.
So here we are.
We are here. And I think that's all that matters is that we are here on HBO.
We are here. Oh my God. Season 2. Now on HBO Max.
You know, first season had an episode in my home state of Missouri. And the tears I cried when they are just having these gay people, queer people, and their families come to their drag shows. I just think the show really is doing it right.
It's so good. I can't wait for this season. I haven't watched the premiere yet, but wait, are you from that? Was it that Bible Vegas town?
So there was like, exactly. It's Branson. So I'm not from Branson, but I'm from and I get dragged all the time on this podcast because it's like, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, which is like, yes, the cosmopolitan city of Missouri, sure.
But it's still informed by the surrounding
Exactly. And so I did not live a Circus Branson life. No. But when I still see a family of people in Missouri going to cheer on their queer child in the Circus of Branson, I still feel a kindred connection to that city.
Of course. And those people. I have no association with Missouri as a state. Overall, and I still got emotional. I was like, this is
exactly incredible. And I have to tell you something, that one of the reasons why I think I still carry some of that with me is because I've had enough experiences. And listen, let me be the first to say, I love St. Louis, I love Missouri, I love being there and visiting. And truly, every time I'm there, I'm like, I guess I should move here. But Matt and I will go to a grocery store. And then, and we, like, 2 visits ago, we got stared at so hardcore by the old white guy that was checking us out at the end. And I was like, it's still happening, and I'm not pricey. This is why we tell this story. Yeah. That's why I think I sometimes feel that emotionalité about it, because it still is, there's so many wonderful things about it, but it still is in the Midwest, and there are still people that have forgotten or never learned that people like us are gorgeous, too.
And like, don't you feel sometimes when I watch We're Here, I'm like, thank God I'm seeing these people. Like get like the coastal elite queers out of the way, like off the screen. Like we've hit our cap. Not our cap, but it's like, let me like actually balance this out by like watching people who like live in like these places where it's kind of there is this like weird tenuous danger to their lives.
Yes.
Day in and day out. And like actually like, you know, I don't know, like them being there. I don't mean to like patronize or fetishize that. It's just like, I just think it's really wonderful to see.
I do want to also congratulate both of us in the Zoomery to talk about Dr. Wendy Osefo's candles have gone out.
Oh my God. Yes. Let's talk about it. I bought three of the five. Anyway,
did already.
I did.
So do you, speaking of trigger, the wicks of it all, do you feel like Karen versus Wendy? How are we? I mean, I think a single wick, if it carries a lot of punch, who cares how many wicks?
I don't care how many wicks. In fact, when I think 3-wick candle, I think, oh, you mean like a fucking mosquito one, like for outdoors? Like the, what is it called? The citronella?
Citronella. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like I think citronella when I think 3-wick.
And
like,
I think spa bathroom, long, white. I'll never have this in my home.
I'm not going to light 3 wicks because then I got to snip 3 wicks. Like I just bought like wick trimmers for the first time. Cause I guess like, I was like, I should probably not set my house on fire and like control the flame. But 3 wicks just feels tedious. 3 wicks is tedium.
Tedium. And I think that candles are more divisive than we initially thought, because I swear to good God, I'm sitting on my couch minding my own. The next thing I know, I smell this very oppressive smell. And I say to myself, I enjoy weed so very much, but I don't, the flower smell that I'm getting right now, I did not perform that. And I look over and it was Casey Musgrave's candle staring me in the eye, and I didn't, and I love Casey Musgrave.
You don't like Slow Burn? That's one of my favorite candles.
Oh shit, and this is where
this is proving your point. Candles are divisive.
Candles are literally proving my point. I maybe was hurt by a man or something that was smelling like
of raspberries or whatever.
Of like raspberries and weed. I don't know what it was. It was just like, I looked over and I was like, yeah. And then Matt lit it again like a week later and was like, confirmed, I don't like. And I didn't really choose this life. I wish I liked it, but that specific candle is the no for me.
That's okay.
There's no end to Real Housewives to be discussed, and I'm just grateful that you took that journey with me. But I do want to go on another journey and ask you a really important question. When you were kind of envisioning the characterization of the proud gay Oompa Loompa, top or bottom, what do you think?
I think he is just a really soft, gentle top.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful.
A really considerate top. And but gosh, I mean, this is the normal cycle of like what I do when
please
I put something on SNL. Like I'll like watch it a bunch of times on Sunday to be like, what was I doing? And then I'll just like over time I'll like forget about it and mm-hmm. I'll just like close the chapter on it in my head. This one was, I mean, it was so fun to write, and Anna Drezin and Allison Gates helped me write it, and it was so fun. It was a little bit of like a weird rush order because we wrote it, we kind of landed on the idea on Friday because they asked us to like write something on Thursday night. We were like, okay, but I've got a busy week with this other stuff, but okay, we'll figure it out. And I just felt a little anxious the whole week leading up to it, just being like, I don't know what this is going to be.
What was the direction of like what they did? They want a broader idea, or they were like gay Oompa Loompa?
No. It was the week before Oompa Loompa, I did this other update that didn't make it to air that I was really kind of bent out of shape about. Mm. And so then they were like, well, we want Bowen on update again this week. And I was like, okay, can I do my thing that I did last week? They go, no. And I was like, okay. And then we just kind of, when Anna and I were just kind of tossing ideas back and forth. And I, as a full joke, was like, well, here to comment on Timothy Chalamet as Willy Wonka is a gay Oompa Loompa. Like, I just like threw that out there as like a just truly a throwaway.
Oh my God, I'm so angry.
And then of course,
that good.
Well, no. And then Anna gets back to me. She was like, well, the producers love it, so we're doing it. And I was like, oh God. Like, anyway. And so I don't know, to be honest, like I felt like there was a glut of like really like outwardly femmy gay stuff that I was doing this week. And I don't think it's from a place of internalized homophobia. I think I'm just like, as just a performer, I'm like, I can do more than that.
Right? Yeah.
But it's fine. Like this is my own weird, stupid, fucked up journey.
No, I'm sure it's really layered. I'm sure there's a proudness of showing certain colors of you, but also like, of course, that desire to stretch and also to let the audience know that there is more than what certain people in the world might just expect of a certain type of person. I get that.
I think I've set some mental model for like a person in let's say Missouri. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter. It's just like I've said, like a person in New York, even like who thinks, oh, he's that guy who does the gay stuff on SNL. And I'm like, I'm happy to be that. I also kind of want to just let people know that like there's other stuff.
Yeah.
But
see,
then, like,
what I want, like in this like moment of hangage with Bowen Yang, what I want you to feel now is like the normalization and validation of like how you carry that and handle that. Even from this conversation, I can tell like that is such a weight that I'm sure any person must feel. And like the way that you, I think, are able to look at the types of characters and types of work and try to put your best foot forward, but also know that there is like people in any state in the country that are going to have all these opinions. Like that is like a heavy burden that anyone would feel. And from my perspective, it seems like you really do such a great job of living with that weight and then just continuing to do amazing work.
Oh, that's very nice, Eric. That's very nice.
It's just, I think like the thesis statement is just like, fuck, that must be so hard. And also like, you're killing it. Like that, I can't, you know, that is a lot to, I mean, even with a platform of a much smaller world, like even with like this podcast or anything, or like I've talked about how I've had a video on TikTok go big in a bad way, you know, of like, you know, getting people angry or whatever it is. And I think that, not to bring this into another one of my favorites of your performances from last night, just because it's also kind of fun and femmy, but like the bug assembly, I think like has to even like, I know that it spoke to so many people, including queer people. I watched that bug assembly so many times since that aired. And like, that's what I also wanted to ask you, especially since we're in this part of the SNL kind of behind the scenes. I want the inside the actor's studio. So like, the bug assembly, like from pitch to stage, like can you tell me how that came about?
So it was a text that I got on Tuesday from Allison Gates. She's one of the supervising writers at SNL, has written so many, like also should get all the credit in the world for like really queering the place up. Mm. Like a lot of great, like specifically, it's not limited to, but like a lot of specifically like lesbian content mm-hmm. like in terms of the writing, and like has a lot to do with her in the recent years of the show. And she and I got hired the same year to write, and she's just like truly one of the funniest people who I know. But texted me on Tuesday, hey, I have the most legally stupid idea in the world, but I was staying in an Airbnb this summer with my mom, and the shower was full of daddy long legs, and I just spent the whole day not being over the fact that their name is Daddy Long Legs. so maybe it's, you know, a school assembly where kids are presenting. And then she literally just like had the full pitch like realized. And then you come out and like, and then she said, you come out in like Vogue or whatever, like that's it. She was like, if you hate it, it's fine. I can take it to like another host some other week, but this is just an idea. And I was like, what are you talking about? That is so funny. And then interestingly, so it was me, Allison, and this other writer, Celestium, who works at the show too. Mm-hmm. And the three of us were just sitting in their office, and we were trying to write, like we were trying to pitch jokes about like a bad art friend sketch, like a sketch based on that New York Times article, God. Bad Art Friend, where it was just like, you know, Rami Malek like reads from his book, and then at like the Strand or something, and then, like I'm in the audience being like, hey, did you write that thing about me? Like, you know, whatever, stupid, like inspired by Bad Art Friend.
Sure.
And then like, we kind of hit a wall very early on. We were like, oh, like there's just a lot of like moving parts to this, and it's not as simple and straightforward as we think. But then Allison was like, I was like, we have that Daddy Long Legs thing. And I was like, oh, right. And then the three of us, it was just like this wellspring of like all these different jokes. And all three of us just kind of like rattled off these different like jokes that made it into the end. And then we wrote it. And then there was just this long discussion about the costume, about like how many legs it would have, how wide, and like all these things. And
who came up with the almost death drop that you're too afraid to do?
That was me. I'd like just being like, you were about to do a death. Yeah, that was just like in the room. But it's like, it was just, that's like the perfect. I mean, those moments are so, to me, they're very rare where it's like, it's just effortless and easy, yeah. And it just comes out of
you. I think the people watching it could tell, because every joke that came out of your mouth was just like, it was like, I looked around the room I was sitting and just like, is everyone seeing this? And it's just me by myself. It's just like, it's so, and the fact that you reference the judges that don't exist, and the Bravo exec dad and the Republican dad. And I think when you also yell about, is there a mommy long legs, and I'm about to freak out, like get her out of here.
It was pretty stupid. It was so really dumb. But Conan O'Brien like finished his CBS show, and he was like, all my career, I've wanted to like be at the intersection of stupid and smart. I'm not saying Daddy Long Legs is smart, but it's very stupid. And then Conan said that, and I like burst into tears because I idolize him, and he, and I think that's the perfect little, you know, liminal or just like Venn diagram.
Yeah. Like, well, I think it's also, you know, what it shows me that I've really been trying to learn, especially in the past 2 years, is like stupid ideas. Like you're rattling off, like the fact that you even said like, yeah, gay Oompa Loompa that sees a tilling. It's like, I think that writing things down or allowing like a dumb idea and to not judge it, because so many other people would have looked at any idea like that and been like, yeah, but like who would actually want to see that, whatever it is. And like, how many other gay Oompa Loompas has this world missed out on?
You're right. You're so right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I don't have that much of an awareness around when I self-edit. And the first form of self-editing so often is someone going, you're telling yourself, oh, that idea would be bad. To shut it down at that level is like tough.
I do want to get us back on course to ask a very famous podcast question, Bowen, which is, we sit around the fire here and we say to ourselves, what made you gay? Whose fault? Who do we blame even? Bowen, what do you say?
I thought long and hard about this question. And for a second, it was hard for me to answer. But then it became so obvious as soon as I had considered it. But it's growing up in Montreal for a portion of my childhood, Celine Dion really just kind of like did it all. Like she like was, like she was the, of course, like, I mean, everyone, but it was easy to sort of take cover behind her growing up because everyone loved her where I lived.
Like, oh, she's, I'm like, she's sure. Like, I mean, she's the a deity. Canada of it.
Yeah.
All.
the Quebec of it all. She was a deity, and like you'd go on field trips at school, and you could go to the cathedral. I mean, there's the big cathedral downtown. Like, is this landmark in Montreal? But like the reason, the thing they would tell the kids, like 5-6 year olds, they would tell us is, you know, this is where Celine Dion got married. Like that was like the whole appeal to it for us. And you know, growing up with her albums, like Let's Talk About Love was right around when Titanic came out. And so it was a combination of Titanic coming out and My Heart Will Go On being this like fucking mega hit, and then us like begging, me and my sister begging my mom to buy Let's Talk About Love when we went to Costco or something. And and then just like listening to it.
Do you remember any tracks from that really stand out to you?
Immortality, Tell Him. I think her duet with Barbara is on that.
Oh, yes.
I think My Heart Will Go On was probably like buried in there as a way to like really sell it. So she does a song with the Bee Gees on it. It's interesting because I have not revisited it in like decades, but it was this like, it broke every dam in my mind in terms of like, okay, here we go now. And then it was me like reading the liner notes, reading the lyrics, like singing along to the lyrics.
I forgot about a good liner note. Oh, when you would just pour through that little booklet.
I know. It was like, there's no like tactile experience anymore unless you're like really obsessed with finals. But
wait, what was actually in those liner notes that was so engrossing?
Just the lyrics. It was just the lyrics.
Just the lyrics, right? And then at the end, it would be like a little special thanks or something. Like
she, at the end, she would like write like thank yous, and it was like, I'm reading what Celine Dion wrote down. You know, like that was like so holy and sacred to me. I was like, oh my God. And then like she, you know, like there would be like concert specials that would air on TV all the time in Canada, and I would watch that. She probably did like some duet with Elton John, and then they went backstage with him and he like showed off his glasses collection. And I was like, when I grow up, I'm going to have as many glasses as Elton John does. And I was like, wait a minute, that's not like a little boy thing to say. And then like would perform like striptease numbers to Celine Dion songs, like in front of my family. They'd be like, no, Bowen, what are you doing? And like, and it was just so like, she like really like gave me all the contours of loving Celine Dion. Like we're all like pulling into focus the fact that I was like gonna be a gay boy.
That really speaks to me. I think it brings so much up, not only about like the diva worship of it all, but also just Celine. I think that you probably felt such a connection to her because not only of just what makes her Celine, but somehow deep inside, we must have known how weird she was. And then when those videos started coming out years, what I would say, like how many years ago, 10 years ago? And it was like Saturday. Like she's singing the days of the week. She's doing her warmups. She's throwing water on her face. I think that I would dare to say we do deserve Celine Dion because we've been through enough, but like we maybe almost don't, because I think that she has also been through a lot, and I think there must be something there about strong female performers with incredible talent that have also been through a very harrowing time. I mean, dare I go dramaturgically to Judy Garland? Dare I go to why Anna Nicole Smith was so beloved by so many queens? Dare I go to
what? Who?
Brittany Murphy.
Of course. I need to watch that documentary.
Me too. My friend Lindy was like begging me to watch it ASAP. But that was yesterday. I'm going to watch it this week. I will watch it. I hear it's incredible.
Me too. I hear it's great.
But yeah, there's just like, I think Celine, like, gosh, she's been through a lot.
She's been through a lot. I think childhood is very hard. And then, you know, the marriage is like a little questionable. And then like, obviously like her like mourning, like, that loss in her life is also like, it kind of informs.
Right. Like, cause that was always Celine. An interesting sort of shadow, dare I say, of.
Yeah.
Cause how much older was he?
Celine was born in 68. Renee was born in 42. So 26 year difference. Like that's a lot. That is not negligible. That is like.
And she was very young when they.
She was like, I think 15. So that's what makes it a little troubling. But let's see, when did they meet? Let's see. They married in 1994. They dated in 88. Oh, okay, never mind. When she was 20. But I feel like That's so, never mind. I take it back, but like, so he got a tape of her when she was 12 and then was managing her. And then,
oh, like, right.
Eight years later, they like were public in their relationship. So I'm like, I can't, whatever. This is not for me to say. Anyway, Celine's been through a lot. And like, I'm sure that was like, just that loss is like, of course, like, so.
Yeah,
so
I mean, it's all, no matter what we say or feel or think about what happened, it's a lot no matter what it was.
Yeah.
What it was a lot.
Was a lot.
Also, you know what's so devastating about me is that when I'm thinking about all these women and like trying to come up with examples of like Brittany Murphy, all these things, my other thought was like, Garcelle. I mean, Garcelle in Beverly Hills.
Garcelle.
Like, she has had a really tough life too, but like, God, has she had such an amazing career life moment right now. And I think that it's the only time I've wanted Lisa Rinna fired. I just want to throw that in.
I mean, yeah. The fact that I was siding against Rinna is like, what's going on?
Yeah. That's troubling. Speaking of a young Celine, that's troubling. So I do want to, because a lot of people have asked me in anticipation of That's the Gayest Podcast with Bo and Yang, when Kim Kardashian was on. First of all, Kim, great. I think killed it. I think such a great job. I do think that my question for you is, were you surprised that one of the biggest takeaways online was that she didn't write her monologue? It's like, hello, no one does.
Well, I'm not surprised that people generally don't understand like the ins and outs of the writing at the show. Like, it's just, it's not terribly, I think it's gotten more transparent in recent years where people are like, oh, there are writers on the sketches and there are writers on the monologue. And I just think that there was a different audience that was trained onto this moment in Kim's career where they're like, they just assume that, I don't know, they just come in with assumptions about Kim, and then in order to like to validate those assumptions, they like will really try to find a roundabout way to be like, see, she's not good at what she's doing. Like, she didn't write that monologue. It's like, yeah, well, almost none of the hosts do, unless they're like a stand-up comic, you know?
Right.
So,
and the fact that she sold it so well, I thought was like, and that's what I was so impressed by her is like, and of course the cut for time sketch of the Costco of it all of like,
oh, right.
I mean, Kim, I thought, and I really am not like trying to patronize her or
no.
You know, I think that she just like it. I don't know anything about what it would be like to host SNL, but what I do know is that to do something out of your comfort zone like that on such a
so
big
scary.
Platform, it's scary. And there are so many skills that you like with, I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the teleprompter of it all, and then the audience and the cameras and the marks and whatever it is. And I think that Kim like really sold it all and just like really did great.
She was just very like steady all week. Like, and like our stage managers were like, just told her, you know, like people usually aren't this calm.
Yeah.
Like, she was very calm, but like not calm in like, I'm going to say like a vacant way. Like, she was just very present the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like,
you could tell she didn't feel above any of it. I just felt like she was so putting herself into the process. And that was like made me really team Kim.
Yeah. She, and she like, you know, like had like her friends there who I think help her out with Skims, but they're also like, but then like, they're these two like cool women, Asian women who run like a climate change org, like, which I think says a lot about like who she surrounds herself with. Like, I think it says a lot about like her, and like, she really is like going all in on this like law thing in terms of like getting people out of prison. Like, she's taking her bar in like a week, you know, like she's taking the bar in like a week. And I just think she's, you know, she's very impressive. And she's able to do all these things with her resources in a way that like, is not like, it's like, I think like most, like I would say, I have this conception that, like, a lot of wealthy people just like don't know what to do with their money.
Right.
You know? And then like, unfortunately I stan a billionaire technically, cause she's in the billionaire zone, but like, she, you know, like is doing,
I think we're allowed to, I dare
I don't
say
know
that
we're
allowed to. I think like Kim, getting people who have been wrongly incarcerated, like, I think it's pretty, I feel the most okay about, like, how are there any other billionaires I would feel this okay about standing
well up? This is the thing, like, any other billionaire who wants to go to space will say, like, it's for the advancement of humankind, when it's really about, like, an, it's just an ego thing.
And they like to play with toy cars and toy shuttles and then actually have their space dreams come true to, like, I really think that that is...
like, that's, to me, that's, like, a stupid arbitrary difference between, like, that kind of, like, indulgence and... I don't think it's an indulgence of her to, like, try to, like, get wrongly incarcerated people.
And take the bar exam and, like, actually do good with that. It's like, I and listen, I don't think that Kim is, like, the most, like, blameless, like, perfect angel. I think that she really, like, the SNL thing, I just think it really swayed me recently. I'm just like, if you show respect to the people that I love,
there you
then
go.
I love, I mean, you, like, more.
She, like, I think she, like, everyone is pretty taken with her. And, like, I wasn't, like, too surprised at that. I knew she would be, like, a very charismatic person. Like, she's who she is for a reason. But
I do have to ask, unfortunately, I'm contractually obligated to ask if Courtney and Travis visited.
It was interesting. Courtney and Travis were there this past week with Young Thug, because Travis was playing drums for Young Thug.
Right.
And so Courtney was not there for Kim's week, but Chloe and Chris were, and I think Scott, they flew out Scott. I don't know that much. I don't watch I never watched Kardashians, unfortunately.
I'm married to someone who does, and sort of peripherally will hear about, and you know, I think that they are engaged and that they are doing that.
Well, who's they? Courtney and Travis?
They are, as of very recently engaged.
And, yesterday, I think. Yeah.
Yet I think what we all should be asking ourselves is, how is Amelia Hamlin doing? I think.
Oh my God! Right. Wait. How does Amelia fit into all this?
So Scott Disick dated Lisa Rinna Haley Hamlin's daughter Amelia, and they broke up. And so I was like, Ada being the seeing of, like, okay, so I wonder how Scott's feeling now that Courtney's engaged to another man, and then I wonder how Amelia is reading the news, and then I wonder if Lisa's mad that she's no longer in,
like just
in the press. Kind of,
by proxy, associated with the Kardashians, necessarily.
I do want to say that in terms of all the celebrity talk, when you went to the Emmys, who smelled the best?
I didn't really go up to anybody, but I mean, Jean Smart hugged me, and then that was really heavenly. I think she did smell very good. She wore really nice. She just, like, wore a really tasteful, chic dress. Her hair was so perfect. I mean, she just looked so beautiful. And I got to meet her. I got to meet her son, who she talked to me about when we did Actors on Actors, in the summer. And I was just like, I can't believe I get to, like, say hello to you. And, like, this is crazy.
Did you pick out the clear heels? When did that come into the picture?
That was so Ian Bradley, wonderful stylist. We were just going through different options, and then we landed on, like, traditional tux, even though we, like, had all these flights of fancy about, like, doing something very different. But then, like, I put the tux on, and I was like, it's got to have some element of intrigue or interest. And then this heels label, Ciro, who are friends, and are, like, brilliant designers, make these heels. And it was like, and they came out this metallic one that was sold out, but then Ian was able to get those, and then I was like, let's go with the metallic ones. It was between the metallic ones or just black leather, and then I wish they were clear. Oh my God, and, like, you couldn't see. I wish they were clear and that there was nothing in them. You couldn't see my feet. Like, I wish my feet were also transparent
somehow. That would have been cool.
But then that was it.
It was so cool to watch. And, like, I think that next year is going to be incredible to see Jennifer Coolidge getting her due.
Oh my God.
And the fact that
when she presented, it was like, everybody was like, oh my God, there's Jennifer. Everybody shut the hell up and listen to what this woman has to say.
And that is the correct reaction. And I think the other correct reaction is to put her in season 2 of White Lotus. Thank fucking God.
I know, when they said, like, oh, no returning characters from season 1, I'm like, well, you gotta have at least J. Cool.
J. Cool or I'm out, or I'm not watching. Bust.
I would take Connie, but then that would mean like the rest of the family. I hope Natasha Rothwell comes back.
She better. I mean, we need to have some sort of come up and some closure. She deserves the world. And if we don't get her in season two, I think they should. They'll do the right thing.
Oh, did they ever close the loop on... Because I remember Jennifer Coolidge's character gives Natasha... Spoiler alert for White Lotus. Gives... like her a bunch of cash, and then I think Natasha just cries and then puts the cash in a drawer,
right?
But I hope she made off with that.
I do too. I just, because I think when you're watching the show, you have in your gut that you know it's not going to go well for her,
right?
But I don't think that needs to be the be all end all for Natasha Rothwell's character. I think that like we can't have her in season two, and I think that we deserve that. Speaking of these women, I do want to ask you, if the world was ending, you can only save one character actress, who would you save?
That's so hard. I would probably... I think I've narrowed it down to like... I have this weird obsession with Missy Pyle. And like, but I feel like she hasn't... I don't know. I feel like that's not someone that people like root for.
But I think we love to hate, but then by loving to hate...
But I just love Missy Pyle so much. And then let me just see, okay, these other names. I mean, it's Missy Pyle for me. Like, she really, like, when she was in Josie and the Pussycats, I was like, who the fuck is... I was like, it was like that character actress thing where you're like, who is this person who's coming in for, like, two scenes and is stealing the whole thing for me? And that's, like, for me, like, what a character actress should do in that relegated role. It's... not
absolutely
that all character actors are relegated to that, but like that is you doing the job well.
Doing the job well, and I'm pulling up her IMDb right now because she has been in so many things that you're just like, oh my god. And then she does
Ma, she gets fucking run over by Octavia, and like,
okay, just... I haven't watched, but I'm so glad that you said that, because now I have to watch, because I've seen all the memes and I just know I have to watch it.
I know, like, if you've seen the memes, you've seen it all. And like, I think it's just like, I hope they make a sequel. And I think Octavia like wants it to happen.
Oh, right. I
just love that Octavia loves it.
I do too. I do. And wait, didn't Octavia just comment like and create a drama on someone's Instagram? Was it with Britney Spears?
Oh no, I don't know about this.
I think she like commented, oh, make sure you get a prenup, girl, like when she got engaged. And then it created a shitstorm and she had to come out with a statement. Ugh, poor Octavia.
Poor Octavia.
But also Missy Pyle is in Gone Girl. I forgot she had a moment in that.
Oh, that's right.
I could have sworn, okay, please do not cancel me if I'm wrong, but don't you remember that movie that was like an Oscar nominee that was a black and white film that was like a silent film that was made like The Artist? Wasn't she in The Artist?
I think that was like an all French cast. Wait, hold on, maybe that's someone else.
It might be someone else,
but she was in she was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I think she was Mike TV's mom, or she was like, one of the kids.
That's right. She was in The Artist.
Oh, look, I apologize.
It says Constance. So she played the character of Constance. She had some random part, and I was like, is that Missy? Like, I just remember watching that, and like, that's the character actress moment where you're like, you're doing your damn fucking job. You're doing your damn job.
Yep.
What a great answer. No, Bowen, that is a very good answer, and you should feel proud.
Okay, thank you.
Before we actually close out, I did want to make sure to ask you, because one of the things I'm looking forward to the most is the... I would say film of the century is Fire Island. Can you just like, I'm like so fucking pumped for this. I'm not like, I really mean that. I just think that this movie is so exciting. Can you give us any either dirt, tease, moment from set, from anything behind BTS?
The BTS was just that it was like surreal the whole time. Was that it was like, oh my God, like this is like, for me, it like checked every box in terms of a movie that I want to just watch.
Exactly. Like, that's what I'm feeling. I cannot wait to watch this movie.
Like a Jane Austen inspired rom-com set in the present day, like set in fire. I mean, like, up and down the call sheet, everyone was queer, like first AD, like every person was like just so wonderful.
Do you know when...
I don't. I really don't. But I hope sometime next summer. Mm-hmm. But I had never gotten the chance to like actually do something that was like emotionally anchored by the writing and really like did the actorly thing of like writing down like my character's like backstory and like kind of like going through things scene by scene and being like, what am I like, what's going on here? Like I hadn't done that before ever. And as someone who like didn't like train that way, whose only training was like screaming, being a fucking idiot in a sketch comedy, like I don't like, this was like a fully different modality to work in. And this is just me talking about myself. Like that was just so perfect and gratifying to do. And then like, just doing it with like Joel was like surreal because it was like kind of a lot of like it's based on Pride and Prejudice, of course, but like a lot of like the dynamics between like Jane and Liz. Like the reason why Andrew Ahn signed on to the movie was because he was like, I just love that this is Pride and Prejudice, but it's about the sisters.
Yeah.
You're more focused about the sisters than you are about like the romance in some ways. And so Joel wrote like our characters' relationship sort of based on like him and I going to Fire Island, like very early on, like 6 years ago, when like, you know, we were just kind of like awkwardly trundling through being like, I don't think where do we fit into this, you know? And so that I think is a really interesting exploration, and it's like it's a very honest look at like how Fire Island is. And so I just couldn't believe we worked there. I couldn't believe like everyone was so welcoming of us. I mean, there were people of course who complained, but overall, like I ran into every single person who like was staying on the island, who like was spending their whole summer there. They were just like, oh my gosh, it's so fun that you guys are here. I was like, are you sure? Because my worst fear is that it disrupts like life for you guys. And like, for the most part, people were like, just like kind of thrilled. And I hope that they enjoy it. I hope that like for queers, we enjoy it, because like, it's this thing where, again, up and down the call sheet, it's queer people. Like, and so I hope it comes off as something authentic when it gets released and people see it.
I think that's why I'm so excited for it.
Yeah. And I think this is not a read. I think this is just like where we're at right now is like this community, for lack of a better word. It's like, which we are, I don't know why I'm saying that, but I think we're hard on each other about if something is like fulfilling what we like sort of blue sky in our own thoughts, you know, like,
yeah,
I think there are really valid expectations that are placed on queer work. But sometimes I feel like it's somewhat tempting to like bring some little ounce of bad faith into things for again, valid reasons that have to do with like scarcity or, defining what like the community wants and all these things. And I just think that I really hope that this sort of gets to like transcend that.
I totally understand what you're saying, and I think that we talk about a lot on this podcast about sort of queer people watching something, and I think if it doesn't speak to either their exact experience or maybe coming from that place of scarcity or whatever it is, that desire to knock it or exaggerate what they might not like about it, I think is something that might have been one of the voices in my head that maybe wants to censor an idea sometimes, is because of that fear.
Maybe.
And I think that reading this idea, and also I think just like, because speaking for myself, I have so much faith in Joel, in you, in Matt, and all the people I know that are involved with it. I think that I feel so excited and ready to fangirl the shit out of it, and just like,
and you can not fangirl it when you watch it and you're like, oh, I hate this.
Watch
like,
me go harder than I did on Dear Evan Hansen. Can you imagine?
I mean, like everyone is allowed to like,
yeah,
react the way they should react. I just feel like you know, it's, I think we're all figuring it out together. Like on either side of it, we're all sort of learning what we should be doing.
Totally.
And I think a nice non-judgmental space for everybody is like right on the money. I think I would love to not judge the audience for their reaction to it. And because that's like my greatest fear, is to like have some sort of contempt for like the people who are like consuming something, like that is like the worst possible relationship you could have in terms of like putting your art out there. And so I really want to like not get to that place ever.
Definitely.
because there are people who do, and I think things suffer because of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm breathing in on that non-judgmental space and breathing out the fucking love of it all. I just could not be a bigger fan. And before we say goodbye, I do want to really ask the most divisive question, which is, Bonnie,
yes,
what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh my God. I'm going to say something so controversial. And it is Rat Race.
You know, I've seen some people be tempted by R Squared, and yet you went straight down the line.
I went straight down the line. It's the original Squid Game. And yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, a perfect answer has never more perfect answer has never been said. Bone Yang, thank you for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I'm so grateful, and I cannot wait to see more magic on screen, on stage, in person, and beyond.
Thanks, Eric.
Oh, what a dream.
Thank you so much for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast and this re-release of the Bowen Yang episode. I'm curious what you think. If you also feel like you can hear a difference from 2 years ago versus now, and if you are going to be at the New York show, let me know. We can celebrate more with the Bowen Yang of it all on November 3rd at Chelsea Music Hall. Head to patreon.com/gayasspodcast for more bonus episodes. And last week's full video episode is up there now. I love you so much, and I'll see you next week.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.